Go Loud.
And that squeaky wheel, let's hope it never gets oiled.
Oh my God. Oh. What a line.
Kneecap two, the Brits are at it again.
It's all his men at the end, isn't it? It's all his with Tui.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to A Few Scoops with me, Aoife Muir, and the big daddy of Irish comedy. Happy Father's Day, Colm O'Regan.
I never know what you're going to say or how you're going to introduce me. And the kindest thing I can say is it's a surprise every time, Aoife, so you do keep me on my toes.
You're the daddy of this podcast and of all our listeners' hearts.
Oh, thank you.
So with that, it's been a big week in the news, so we'll hop to it. The long-awaited court case of Macara, also known to his mammy as Liam O'Hanley, from West Belfast, one of the lead singers of the Irish rap band Kneecap, appeared in Westminster Magistrates Court today. So most people will know that Liam O'Hanley has been charged with a terror offence for displaying a Hezbollah flag at a concert in London over a year ago. It's worth noting that the video of this concert was live that entire time. It happened live in front of thousands of people, and nothing was said about it at the time until Kneecap played at Coachella in the States. A lot of pro-Israeli people were very upset about it. And then this large campaign against Kneecap and their music and their beliefs began. So Liam O'Hanley appeared in Westminster Magistrates Court. Thousands of people attended with Ireland flags, Palestine flags. There was a trad band that played outside the court. He attended with the band and his solicitor, Dara Mackin. Liam O'Hanley was granted unconditional bail, and the next hearing now will be on the 20th of August. So there was no legal argument today. There was no back and forth about Hezbollah or anything else. This was just a hearing. The chief magistrate, Paul Goldspring, told Liam O'Hanley he must attend court on that day. And would you believe it? Liam O'Hanley has requested an Irish language translator.
I was wondering whether Kneecap the Movie 2, a bigger court, features like a Hollywoodized version of him in the court refusing to speak in English.
Kneecap 2, the Brits are at it again. So, yeah, he'll be back in court. The one thing I would say is if, you know, the British establishment really does believe that Liam O'Hanley is a supporter of Hezbollah, it's hard to believe they'd be granting him unconditional bail.
Yeah.
This man has a lot of money, is very successful and tours the world with an Asgwe, like a rock band, rap band. And an unconditional bail tells me that there is not a lot of concerns about Liam O'Hanley in terms of his danger to society or anything else. And it's almost as if there is a pattern and a tradition of the British establishment going after Irish people, musicians, artists for their beliefs, because they know that these people and music itself is propaganda, and it's incredibly important. Christy Murr was stopped by Special Branch. Paul McCartney was investigated because of his support for Irish people.
What was Paul McCartney's famous song? What is it? Leave Ireland to the Irish? Was that right? Back in the his post-Wings days?
Give Ireland back to the Irish.
Give Ireland back to the Irish.
Was the song that the British security establishment was so head up about that Paul McCartney was stopped and questioned.
I suspect that got the song, from what I remember of the song, it got that song far more plays than that song would have probably got on its own.
When you think about it, isn't Leave Ireland to the Irish very close to Get Your Brits Out?
Yes, it is. It's just more poetic, I think.
Yeah, so, you know, I think my beliefs on this will be pretty self-explanatory. But
I like the idea that it's forcing the word OG to be said in the heart of the British establishment. Like, it's great to see the little bit of Irish being written across London as well, too, with Macara appearing on billboards.
Yeah, so they had billboards all across London today saying more blacks, more Irish, more dogs, Macara. And they are playing a sold-out gig in Wembley tonight. 10 marketing budgets couldn't have bought this amount of publicity for Kneecap. There are reports across the media today of people who have travelled from all over Europe just to come to the Magistrates Court to support Macara. And I think what I would say as someone who works in the media and works as a journalist and, you know, has a profile, it is so much easier and so much more profitable to say nothing about Palestine.
Yeah.
Mukhara and JJ and Nish in kneecap are costing themselves money to talk about Palestine. They are denting their ability to make money in America. They're denting their ability to tour in America and Australia and any other country who sides with Israel. There are people who are incredibly famous across the world. The biggest pop stars in the world have not said one single thing about a genocide in Gaza because they know it will cost them money. These young fellas don't come from anything. And they have had more success than I'm sure that they ever imagined when they started this. But they are still willing to give that up to speak about a genocide in Gaza. And the notion that this trumped up charge against a 27-year-old from West Belfast is going to do anything other than keep Israel quiet for about 10 seconds. So we'll be back and we'll talk about it when it comes back. But I just think in the long tradition of the Brits never getting it, never learning a lesson and never not at it, this is just another long-running saga in the 800 years of saga we've had to deal with.
So what you're saying is they're always never not at it is the
kneecap
lesson.
Two.
Kneecap
the two. Brits at it again.
Wow. And I think the fact that they've been in court means it'd be even harder to take them off Glastonbury now, wouldn't it? Because you have that...
That becomes a political...
Yeah, that
statement.
Media moment. In, you know, it's one thing to have concerns or people are worried or security, but when there's a court case that becomes a bigger story.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people will be aware that kneecap are due to play Glastonbury and that will be live streamed on the BBC. So we'll have an instance now where the BBC will have to stream whatever kneecap put up on the stage. But there has been, again, big pressure on Glastonbury. We saw that there was anonymous letters sent from music industry heads telling Glastonbury that they didn't want kneecap there. So far, they will remain part of the lineup. But you need to remember as much about the security state and Israel and everyone who's behind stopping kneecap doing what they're doing. The music industry doesn't even want them. No, not all of the music industry, but a lot of very powerful people do not want kneecap and do not want their message. But for me, it always comes back that the Brits are so afraid of working class Irish people. They have never beaten us before and they're not going to beat us now. And there's just something so heartwarming about the support that Liam Hogue is getting.
What about working class British people? They're going to the gigs. It's not just working class Irish people.
And like when kneecap won money from the British government, they donated it to the Shankill Community Centre, you know, a completely opposite community. One of my friends toured with kneecap over across England and he said a lot of the audience that he spoke to were young English people with Irish parents or grandparents because we don't invade countries with tanks and guns. As Tommy Tiernan said, we invade with a phone number and a sleeping bag. And now that's coming to fruition. And, you know, people, especially young people, are watching a live streamed genocide. And whatever they think of Republican politics, they're now on the side of kneecap and Liam Hogue.
That's a good news story.
I'm actually going to see kneecap in Fairview Park. Have you ever been to a kneecap gig?
I haven't actually, no.
There are a lot of dads there actually.
I don't think that's what this, I mean, I think it's just my general lameness that I haven't been there. It's not a demographic specific.
Yeah.
It's because of all who I am, not part of who I am, that I haven't been. I'm just,
yeah,
I
like
just
haven't
been,
might
I haven't been too much.
Like people might see your trainers.
No, I'm not afraid. I like, they're not worth that much. And they're from Dunn's trainers, not kneecap. But I tell you what, one thing I like about kneecap is there's moshing at it.
Mosh pits, yeah.
Yeah, and that takes me back to the old teenage disco.
Did you used to mosh?
Yeah, coach for teenage disco, moshing.
You just want to touch someone else.
No. I mean, in those days, girls were wearing so much jumpers and combat trousers. So, you know, no point. But it's the ultimate freedom moshing. Like it's a
very male dominated industry.
Not in coach for disco in the mid 90s. It was a, well, I mean, I personally was never groped, so I don't know how it was for how it was for other genders.
All. Yeah, yeah.
But Enter Sandman, basically, when that,
yeah,
you know, that
when
was
the beat
the trigger,
drops, as it were,
when the beat drops, as you young people say, when they start playing the song. As I say. But the moshing, I just found out recently. So Download Festival, which I think was last weekend, had last week urged people in the mosh pit not to wear their smartwatches because they found that
previous... Makes them look like dorks.
There's been a huge democratization of smartwatches.
Yeah, I've seen a wedding photo where the bride is still wearing her smartwatch. It's like, do you need your steps on your wedding day?
Well, she just wants to capture her heart rate at the moment when the best thing that's ever happened to her happens to her. Mm. When she runs away from the altar. So they don't want people to wear their smartwatches in the mosh pits because there's so much collisions accompanied by peaking heart rate that some smartwatches are sending automated 999 calls to the emergency services, which is overloading them because they have to filter through what's a mosh pit and what's a real emergency. So it was an actual, it was enough to make a warning be necessary before last week's Download Festival. So I don't know whether
there would
it was
be a
reduction.
Lot of mosh pits at Download. Download's like the goth festival, like a rock festival.
Korn were there and a few others.
Yeah.
So that would be a place to mosh. Anyway, so enjoy the kneecap gig next tomorrow night, but you know, just be careful not to be accidentally sending emergency calls from your
wrist. I'm actually going as my friend's plus one and she is 6 months pregnant.
Okay.
So I plan to, you know, stand around her like a force field so that like no one bumps into her at any point because she's a holy vessel. So do you know who else are moshing?
I don't.
Iran and Israel.
I thought I was the one bringing the banter to this one, but you've excelled yourself with this.
Okay, this is a really complicated story and I pride myself on being able to break down complicated stories in the news. So this one, I'm going to give it a go. Iran and Israel have had big issues with each other for decades. This is not a new problem. Iran is a huge critic of Israel and Israel's campaign in Gaza. This did not start with the genocide. Iran has been a huge critic of Israel and especially Benjamin Netanyahu. There has been 6 days of strikes between the two countries, but let it be said on this podcast, Israel started this round of strikes. They call them preemptive strikes. Israel said that they had to bomb Iran because they believe Iran is close to getting a nuclear weapon. Israel and America both have nuclear weapons, but they have said Iran aren't allowed to have a nuclear weapon. Iran, for their part, said, no, we're not. They're trying to develop nuclear energy in this time of climate change and whatever else and looking for alternative energy sources. They said that they are trying to expand their nuclear power.
But they have a suspiciously large number of centrifuges. You know, they're doing a lot of enriching. So are we going into enriching uranium in this podcast, do you think?
Well, let's leave it for today.
Okay.
So what I would say also is the reason people are so skeptical is because back in the good old days, in the last war that everybody was dragged into, there was also claims of weapons of mass destruction, which turned out to be complete and utter scam. So people are naturally a bit more reticent. Israeli fighter jets, which are aided and backed up by America, have targeted Tehran overnight. They warned the people of Tehran to leave. There's 10 million people in Tehran, and it is not possible to evacuate such a large place, especially when bombs are raining down on people. So hundreds of Iranian people are dead, and that is not including the targeted assassinations of people who work in the nuclear facilities. Iran has bit back. Iran is not as successful in its attack on Israel because Israel's security defenses are a lot more sophisticated because they are sent and paid for by America. Now, just now, at this minute, it's Israel and Iran knocking the shite out of one another. However, Israel really, really wants America to get involved. We know the President, Donald Trump, does not like war. He doesn't like getting involved. He ran on a campaign that they would not be getting involved in Ukraine and Russia. They'd be pulling out of Afghanistan, which actually ended up being under Joe Biden. But he does not like war. However, it now appears in the last day that Donald Trump is becoming more and more convinced to get involved with this war. And parts of his own base and his own Republican Party are starting to turn against him. There are a lot of isolationist views within the Republicans who say, no, 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 no. We've just got out of a war in the Middle East. We're not going back. So within the Republican Party, think about two groups of some of the worst people you've ever come across in their life. And you have to side with one of them. And at one point this week, I found myself siding with Marjorie Taylor Greene. a Republican politician who is one of the worst people ever elected. And she is on the right side of this.
You like her music, but not necessarily
art from the artist.
Rest of her life.
So as of Wednesday, Iran's supreme leader rejected America's calls for surrender and warned America that joining this war would lead to, quote, irreparable damage. Annoy Israel or ramping up rhetoric about a regime change. A regime change means they are going to go in and murder Iran's supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. He bit back today with a live televised speech and said the Americans should know that any US military intervention will undoubtedly be accompanied by irreparable damage. Tehran was preparing missiles and other equipment to strike US bases in the region if Washington joins the war. What I would say about this, other than men are too emotional for politics, is that like Gaza, like the Congo, like everything else, it is civilians who will pay the price. We are lurching from one war to the next in the Middle East, and we have a very emotional, very at times thick American president who basically changes his opinion on his actions between the last person he spoke to.
Also, when the attack happened first, he disassociated America from it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it may be that he spoke to Benjamin Netanyahu, mm-hmm. and he's very weak in one-to-ones with the likes of Putin or Netanyahu. He's very easily persuaded. Yes. Also, galaxy brain theory, Putin, who is an ally of Iran, because Iran sent Putin loads of drones which were used to kill civilians in Ukraine, the Shahed drones, which Russia now make their own, so they might need Iran as much.
Mm-hmm.
But this crisis causes a $5 or $6 increase in the oil price, which is good for Putin because he's potentially broke if the price stays as it is. So then the old saying, what Putin wants, Trump does. And so Trump then, maybe it's in his interests that this war becomes enlarged. It's hard to know because he did say he didn't want American involvement in foreign wars. It's also possible he has some other mad bastard advising him who says it's okay, we can do this just with airstrikes.
Mm-hmm.
No Americans will die. It's also the case that Iran is also awful. You know, they have an awful government.
This is also, not
and
a country.
They have sponsored. See, this is, okay, Colm trying to wrestle with geopolitics. Israel, awful. Their attacks on Hezbollah mean that Lebanon has been in some way freed from some of the influence of Hezbollah, which has been a nefarious influence in Lebanon. The fact that they attacked Hezbollah weakened Assad, one of the worst people ever to have lived, which mm-hmm. means Syria has a chance. I'm not saying good things happen because bad people do bad things. I'm just saying the world is a very complicated place. And it's pretty clear, genocide's bad and preemptive strikes on a rumour are bad.
Can I just come in and say that Israel have said that they have launched this war in self-defence?
Yeah.
They have bombed 4 countries in the last week and they are still claiming self-defence.
Yes, I know.
Even the Brits weren't at that. And I just find, and people will turn off from these stories because they are so complicated.
Yeah.
And it's very hard not to despair. But the reason that we have to stay engaged in this is because people like us will die because of this, because these men have decided that their political will and their political legacy depends on the death and destruction of other people. And at the end of the day, here now recording on Wednesday, more than 220 people are dead in Israeli strikes and 24 Israelis are also dead.
What do you think the punter listening to this, faced with the complexity of something that, you know, how far back do you go? The Shah and the Israel used to get on. Then there was the revolution. The Ayatollahs came in. The Arabs and Iranians don't get on with each other for cultural and religious reasons. What do you think people struggling with complexity like that, what's our role? Like, is getting informed a positive act to start off with?
I think all politics is local. I do not think we, as a small country, can stick our head in the sand. We have seen what Irish people can do when we join cases against, for instance, Israel in the genocide case. We can take in thousands of Ukrainians like we did when Russia invaded Ukraine. It is not enough to say that's far away from me, because I come from a place where for decades people in the Republic and people in England said, oh, sure, they're all mad up there. It's nothing to do with me. And it is important for us as people to look out for other people. And whether that's donating to the Red Cross or writing to your TD, you have to stay engaged, because if we don't stay engaged, people like Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump, who are already acting with total impunity, will only get worse. And I know you think the people like Netanyahu and Trump can't get worse, but they can. And without journalists... Oh, and make no mistake, Israel bombed the Iranian news public station in the first days of this. Israel is claiming that they are doing this to stop a nuclear weapon. Why are you bombing the TV news station then? It's because they're afraid of journalists and they're afraid of citizens and they're afraid of working people who can do something about this. So it's tough and it's depressing, but you can't put your head in the sand and say it doesn't matter, because it will come for us too.
Okay, I'm off to research the origins of the Israel-Iran conflict as we speak.
Goes back a long time. Right, so the latest of Trump's decisions is, I may do it, I may not do it. Nobody knows what I'm going to do. And he sounds like me when someone asks me if I'm going to go to the pub.
Who else is going?
I think it's the same.
And he might ask that question as well too. It's not exactly we should fight them on the beaches. You know, coming back on what you're talking about, people power, maybe there's a good news story to show that people can influence, often by being somewhere else. Because last weekend was ostensibly a celebration, a military parade to celebrate the birth of the American army, but also coincided with Trump's birthday. He's always wanted a big, beautiful military parade.
Isn't that such a coincidence that his military parade ended up being on his birthday?
Isn't it?
That's mad.
Yeah, he must have been so embarrassed with the size of that cake. Well, he was embarrassed, as it turns out. There was, across America, 2,000 protests, all, it was called No Kings, saying we reject tyrants, you know, almost holding up the original American Constitution, which is itself a fairly flawed document, but has its moments. And they're rejecting the idea of a tyrant, of a monarch, and No Kings, and they're saying Trump is a mad king. So between the 2,000 protests, there were estimated between 4 and 6 million people attending. Mm. And then Trump's military parade sounded like this.
Is that a squeaky wheel?
That is a squeaky wheel of one tank passing. And like, if you've been to St. Patrick's Day parade, you can't hear the wheels of the things going through it. No. You'll hear the engine, but you won't hear the wheel. But that's a squeaky wheel of a tank, because there's so few people there that you can hear a squeaky wheel. And they reckon about 100,000 people went. They had,
it was in Washington.
In Washington. Yeah. They had cordoned off, you know, special barriers for up to 250,000. It was, by all accounts, pretty miserable. But people were complaining about the price tag of it, you know, the tens of millions of dollars. But now it could be said that as a PR stunt against Trump, those tens of millions of dollars were priceless, because it eroded what was supposed to be his big, beautiful thing. And people are also saying that it kind of has turned one of many, many tides against some of the ICE seizing of immigrants at that particular time. It's not the last we've heard of ICE, but it was something that kind of crystallized popular opposition to Trump. And that squeaky wheel, let's hope it never gets oiled. Oh my God. What a line. What a line.
My God. Yeah, I heard a lot of the bill for this parade will actually be reinforcing the roads in Washington, because the tanks are so heavy, they will basically tear up the roads and make them unusable for cars. So then the city of Washington will have to pay to, you know, redo the roads. But anyway, happy birthday, Donald Trump.
Loads of work for young lads over there now on J1s to work on that building site.
I look forward to some wee podrig working on the roads over there for Donald Trump. And I actually saw one video from the military parade, and Trump himself appeared to fall asleep during the parade. Now we need to remember he's a man in his 80s. My granddad's 89. He's usually awake for stuff. But listen, everyone's different.
Has your granddad been to many military parades? He wouldn't really call them parades.
I don't want to answer that. So this is a showbiz story, which we don't usually do, but it also underlies a bigger issue. So the main doctor who has been charged with the drug overdose of Matthew Perry, better known as Chandler Bing from Friends, he is to enter a guilty plea in the coming weeks, according to the US Department of Justice. So most people will be aware that Matthew Perry, the 54-year-old Canadian actor, had a lengthy struggle with drug addiction and alcohol. He wrote books about it. He talked about it very publicly. All of us who grew up with friends will know, you know, you kind of watch Matthew Perry fluctuate weight-wise throughout the show. And he was very, very open. And I think at a time where he was, you know, so successful, for him to talk about, you know, having an addiction problem in the 90s wasn't very common.
I wonder, is it harder for TV stars because they're always working, you know, like a film star does a movie, can disappear, you know, it's whatever it is, a 2 month shoot. But for them, whatever it was, 26 episodes, maybe shot in sequence, maybe shot close together, but constantly on and available and relevant to people's eyeballs.
Yeah. And if you look back at some of the interviews that Matthew Perry gave in the aftermath of Friends, he says that he barely remembers, you know, season two and season three. He said he has no memory because he was, you know, in the throes of a very heavy addiction and making a lot of money, which obviously helps when you're in the throes of addiction. So Matthew Perry, as most people will know, very sadly died in 2023. He was found unresponsive in a hot tub in his home in Los Angeles, and it was found in his autopsy that he had high levels of ketamine in his system. So now this doctor who purchased the ketamine and then sold it on to Matthew Perry, he is due to plead guilty. Just to add, this is the type of person this doctor was. In text messages that were found in his phone, he said, "I wonder how much this moron will pay," talking about Matthew Perry, a man deeply in the throes of addiction who was incredibly desperate. And this man distributed 20 vials of ketamine over a 2 week period for Matthew Perry. And Matthew Perry then later died. Now, I would say most people in Ireland will know ketamine as a party drug or people that take it at festivals, but you can take ketamine as part of supervised therapy for depression.
Okay.
And that was initially what Matthew Perry was taking ketamine from. But ketamine is a very addictive drug and is seen basically, I think in Ireland, most people would say it as a party drug. It initially was known as the horse tranquilizer, and people now take it at festivals. So the way it's been described to me is, unlike cocaine, which really hypes a person up and has a very short, sharp high, ketamine lasts longer. It's much cheaper than cocaine, and it's more like a tranquilizer. It's more like an anesthetic.
And it's dissociative, is that right? Like, it makes you feel like you're outside of your own body.
Yeah, so if you think of cocaine making someone hyper aware
and annoying,
ketamine makes you hyper unaware, in that people use it for therapy because, you know, you're deep thinking, but sometimes, or maybe other people say a lot of the time, you're thinking absolute nonsense.
What's a K-hole then? Is that in the throes of it?
A K-hole is when someone takes too much ketamine and their body becomes paralyzed. I was actually very young the first time I saw someone at a house party in a K-hole, and I was terrified. The person is awake and conscious, but their arms and legs aren't moving. They're usually laid out on a sofa at a house party somewhere, drooling sometimes, talking, but in a very paralyzed state. That happens when people take too much. And you can also hallucinate. It's a hallucinogenic drug as well.
I presume the stuff you get is shite as well. Like, it's mixed with all sorts of, it's not out of a vet's fridge.
Exactly. So when I was looking up at this story about Matthew Perry, I went to have a look at how much ketamine has actually been taken in Ireland. So there's been a few big drug hauls at different ports in which cocaine and other drugs have been seized, and ketamine is part of that. 4 kilograms of ket was seized at an industrial premises in West Dublin, along with smaller consignments of cocaine and MDMA. But they say the real concern for the health industry is that ketamine is being mixed with other drugs at festivals by people who are very young. And ketamine, because of the price point, is going to be more attractive to young people. And it has really, really long-lasting effects. So a big thing that people will often talk about after years of ketamine abuse is K-bladder, in which your bladder shrinks. You become incontinent. So you will often hear young people, young men, talking about peeing themselves. And that's not when they're high. This is, you know, weeks after. They can pee themselves, their bladder will shrink down that it can only hold 10, 20 milliliters of urine. And it also can have a big effect on your heart, high blood pressure, hallucinations, agitation. And like every other drug addiction, when it's not monitored and you're not aware of the purity of what you're taking, addiction will take everything else from you. And listen, we can have a completely different conversation about the decriminalization of drugs and, you know, the effect of the drug policy in this country. And I just want most people, if you don't take anything away from this podcast today, is that more than one person now dies every day in Ireland of a drug overdose. And we have not overhauled our drug policy whatsoever. And ketamine is just one thing. It's very cheap. It's very accessible. And we are in the middle of festival season now. So if you can, please get your drugs checked when you're going to a festival. It is not useful to tell people not to take drugs. Politicians have been trying that since day dot.
I was just going to say, you also have the choice not to take drugs. And, you know, the music is the high as well. I'm hoping that hoping all of this will be fixed by the time my daughters are age.
None of your daughters are never going to do anything that you wouldn't approve of.
And what we're going to do is we're going to sit down from quite an early age and I'm going to talk them through it. And then they are going to make responsible decisions, because at every moment, no matter who's around them, they're just going to hear my voice saying, you know, you have a choice, and like, life is a high.
Life is high enough. Every day is a gift. Colm, what is your good news for this week?
Yeah, well, I'm such a giving person, and since becoming a father, I'm genuinely happy for other people's success. So this week, it's the winner of the Euro Millions jackpot. It was worth 250 million euro, and it was won in Ireland in a ticket bought in a shop, not bought online. So an artisan ticket, a ticket they carved themselves, a hipster ticket, a ticket with a moustache, bought in a shop, supporting local business. And still, we don't know as of now who it is, but National Lottery spokesperson Emma Monahan said it was all hands on deck last night. Well, I'm not sure what that means in the National Lottery
all
context.
All hands in their pockets, I would say.
I think, you know, they're just trying to give something back, okay?
250 million.
Yeah.
It's nice when people are able to buy houses in Dublin.
Yes.
Just the one house.
I feel like, you know, they're trying to stay anonymous, and it kind of reminds me of Goodfellas, the movie where they're told, keep a low profile, don't do anything silly. But like, they're sure to attract attention by buying like a coffee or without checking the coins, or maybe seen to be renting in Dublin.
Applying for a mortgage. Actually, they wouldn't even need a mortgage. Sure, they could buy it in cash.
Just splashing out on GoFundMes, just doing GoFundMes for other people without checking anything, which is something that people have been known to do drunk in the middle of the night. I have supported causes that I have not intended.
When those riots were on in Belfast last year and they were burning all those Parisian people out of their supermarkets, I was never done giving money to them. I felt so bad for everybody. And then I realised when I sobered up, I was like, jeez, I don't have the money to be doing this, supporting everybody.
But, you know, the impulse is good. Anyway, so the 250 million euro has been won. It's the latest in a line of these that have been won in Ireland. Gone right back. Dolores McNamara, I think, from Limerick, was the first person. And it's funny when something big like that happens, if they're named forever after, anything that happens to them, whether related to their win or not, it just becomes son of Euromillions winner, daughter of. So it does follow them around. I mean, there's always ripple effects when something big like that happens. I'm pretty sure Dolores McNamara, given that when she won, her social welfare records were accessed for no reason, no good reason, by 72 separate civil servants in the Department of Social Welfare, just being nosy. I love it.
That is,
and 28 revenue officials as well had a look. And as somebody who was working on a government project at the time, I remember it wasn't us, but everybody became very careful what they did with test data and customer data after that. That was a catalyst. I don't know whether it caused a change in law, but sometimes there are unintended consequences when something big happens. So hopefully they're going to be good for these people, because the past is littered with people who won lots of money and things didn't go so well for them. But there's also been good people. There was wasn't there a couple, I think they're from the North, but then lived in England.
Yes.
And they actually assiduously gave away half of it.
Yeah.
And I remember reading for one of them, the wife in that couple was saying that they'd plan to give away X amount every year, and they were already at their 2032 target.
Aww.
And that was the only news story about them, that they were giving it away. The media hates that kind of thing once they found out they're good, you know, so they left them alone. So you don't see any more headlines from them after that.
Yeah, we had an instance as well with a woman, she was actually living on social welfare at the time when she won the lottery, and in Strabane in County Tyrone, very close to my hometown. And Strabane has been neglected for decades. And she gave away millions to the town of Strabane for different health centres and different community things. And she said, yeah, sure, what else would I be doing with it? I'm going to give it to the good town of Strabane. So there you are. I think most people would do the same thing. There's very few people that don't end up giving it away. Sure, what are you going to do with it?
Well, the National Lottery said get financial advice, which presumably means don't give it away. But I'd say be careful with who you get financial advice from. Poor old Dolores got financial advice to invest in foreclosed houses in Detroit back in the day and lost a packet when the house price didn't appreciate like it was hoped. I mean, you know, who among us hasn't taken a punt on the famously run down 8 Mile centre of Detroit? But, you know, prices kind of go up as well as down, even if they've already gone down a fair bit. So anyway, best of luck to the person.
For many of us listening who do not have mortgages and probably will never have mortgages, a lot of us listening to this are just thinking, God, I hope I know this person and I could tap them.
Yeah.
I'll pay her back. I just need the cash.
Yeah. Or even the deposit.
Yeah.
The deposit. Yeah.
Just so, you know, for a lot of us, it is, you know, not to get into the housing crisis when we're talking about the lottery, but for a lot of people, you're waiting on a dead relative or someone you know won the lottery.
Yeah.
For a lot of stages. And
sometimes those might be the same person and that could be suspicious.
But yeah, delighted for them. I wonder if they'll come forward. I personally wouldn't because, oh, I'm such a soft touch. You know, if people would be like, oh, Aoife, could you give me a...
Well, you never get credit for anything again, ever. I mean, you would have bought your way onto this podcast.
Yes.
Used your millions to buy the coveted spot on a news / banter podcast on Go Loud.
But that's really nice because usually people say that I have slept my way to success. So it's nice that people might have thought I bought it for a change.
Much less effort, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. Sometimes, like to be quite honest, I'd rather have bought my way onto things and have to speak to men, let alone anything else.
It's all as men at the end, isn't it? It's all as with you, Aoife. We're still happy for these people, though, aren't we? They're 250 million.
I'm absolutely delighted for them. Well done. And if you want to get in touch and sponsor the podcast, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. And you can spread it out over a number of episodes. You don't have to dish it all on one episode. But if you feel like you're not ready for a big commitment as a 250 million euro lottery winner, you might have a lot on your mind, you could just do a lump sum, an endowment for the podcast for the future of democracy.
We could get a sponsorship situationship. They're not ready to commit, but they do want to give us some money.
Very good. Friends with benefits.
So on that note, we come to the end of this episode of A Few Scoops. But as we are a podcast who are trying to keep people informed but not depress the life out of them, we want to hear your good news. Did you have a baby? Are you pregnant and want to be? Are you getting on the property ladder? Have you found a tenner in your coat? We really want to hear from our listeners every week at our email address. It doesn't have to be a world news story. It can just be a local good news story to you and your life. And the email address is afewscoops@goloudnow.com. And we'd love to read them out. You can obviously be anonymous if you want. That's us for this week, Colin.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing those good news. Now, good news that doesn't come at the expense of somebody else. Like, I found a tenner in somebody else's pocket. You know.
Yeah, don't report your crimes to us.
It's not a zero-sum game. It's just a general contribution to the amount of good news in the world.
And remember, unsolicited nude photos is a crime.
The way you said that and then look straight at me, just I feel implicated. I know it's like all my gender. We've been through this in every episode so far. But just to be clear, that is not in the context of anything happening in relation to this podcast.